Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Rishabhdev's appearance. Text number, what number
have we got?
15. Okay, so this is just prose. Yad uha vava tava punar adabrakarta iha sumahutas tatrata diyam mandanam nastat yad deva helanam deva deva harsi samyena sarvam pativodhum avidusham. With word yat, because. Uha vava, indeed. Tava,
your.
Puna,
again.
Adhabraha kartaha. O Lord,
who
performs many activities. Iha,
here.
In this arena of sacrifice.
Samahutaha.
Invited. Tatra.
Therefore.
Atadiyam. Who aspire to fulfill material desires. Mandanam.
Not very intelligent.
Naha.
Of us.
Tat. That, yat,
which,
deva helanam,
disrespect
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
deva deva,
Lord of Lords,
ahasi,
please,
samyena,
because of your equipoised position. Saravan, everything, Prativodhum, tolerate, Avidusham,
all
of us who are ignorant. I put the all in, but in the wrong place. I got it all right, but in the wrong order. Of us who are all ignorant. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Adabrakataha. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. Mandanam, but also artadiyam, right? Artadiyam, we want to fulfill it. Artadiyam means meditating on the artha, material desires, mandana, not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offence at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offence because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Oh, okay. Avidusham, at the end, there's, we are not. We are ignorant. Okay. Purport, the priests was certainly unhappy to have called the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha for such an insignificant reason. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. The Lord is engaged in various activities and the pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. The pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy. And when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. The Lord is unseen even by demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. By calling on the Supreme Lord, the priests of Nabi Maharaj proved themselves unintelligent. Nonetheless, the Lord came out of his causeless mercy. All of them, therefore, wanted to be excused by the Lord. Worship of the Supreme Lord for material gain is not approved by authorities, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 16. Chaturvidha ajantema janaha sukritino rujuna ato jigyasu artarti jnanicha paratarshubha. O best among the Bharatas, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Initiation into bhakti begins when one is in a distressed condition, or in want of money, or when one is inquisitive to understand the Absolute Truth. Nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. They are accepted as pious, sukritina, due to their inquiring about the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. However, the Lord is so kind that even though disturbed, he fulfills the desires of such beggars. The pure devotee is anyabhilashita-shunya. He has no motive behind his worship. He is not conducted by the influence of Maya in the form of karma or jnana. The pure devotee is always prepared to execute the order of the Lord without personal consideration. The Ritvija, the priest at the sacrifice, knew very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. And because they considered themselves under the influence of karma, fruitive activity, they begged the Lord's pardon. They knew that the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Sabhakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamam Bande Sri Gurum Dinatainam. So, we can just imagine the potency of the Ritvija, or also known as the Ritvik, right? The Ritvik, or Prabhupada calls them here Ritvija, not the Ritvik. The Yajaman, the man, the person, the individual who is sponsoring the Jagya, the person who is doing the Jagya, and the Ritvik is the person who acts on behalf. So Maharaj Nabi is performing this sacrifice and the Lord has appeared. But the priests were feeling embarrassed that they'd called the Lord to bestow his blessings upon Maharaj Nabi in the form of a son. Because he's praying for the Lord to be his son, effectively. He wants a son. So the qualities of the Ritvija is unique in that even though they're praying on behalf of, they're performing the jagya on behalf of Maharaj Nabi, and they're doing so for what ostensibly appears to be a material purpose. They're sufficiently advanced enough, which means, you know, quite elevated persons, because the Lord has appeared before them, right? So they're not, and they're also very humble, right? Very humble, and they're submitting themselves before the Lord with prayers and humility, and they're somewhat embarrassed that they've called the Lord, as Prabhupada says here, an insignificant reason. Although it must be a pure, it must actually have pure intent, because Maharaj Nabi wants a son as good as the Lord, so effectively he wants the Lord as his son. So it's not entirely a material consideration. Right? But they're presenting themselves as insignificant. And Prabhupada makes this very significant point right at the beginning of the purport. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. Because the mood of a devotee is, let me serve you. Let me serve you. Let me not inconvenience you. Let me be your servant. Whatever you want, I will do. Not whatever I want, you will do. and of course, we were discussing this the other day. The mood of a devotee is such that he doesn't pray to Krishna for benefits for him or herself. You know, we consider it pious that a person goes to church or goes to the temple and submits themselves before God. But very often they're going to pray for themselves, effectively. Let my health be good. Let my income be strong. Let my enemies be destroyed. Let my son get a high mark in his exam. Let my daughter have a good husband. You know, this is very often the reason why people go to church to pray. And Prabhupada mentions that here. This is the beginning of devotion, actually. Interesting. Prabhupada says this is the beginning of devotion. Initiation into bhakti. This is a pretty amazing statement, right? Initiation into bhakti begins when one is in a distressed condition or in want of money. This is the beginning of bhakti. Or when one is inquisitive to understand the absolute truth. But then Prabhupada says, nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. Interesting. In that, at least there's the understanding that without the sanction of God, nothing happens. Right? There's an appreciation of the majesty of the Lord, of the Supreme Person. Right? So in that sense, bhakti starts, because there's an appreciation that it's not by my efforts that I'll be successful. It's only by the mercy of the Lord that I can achieve anything. So that's the beginning of bhakti. But at the same time, Prabhupada says, not a devotee. Because the devotee thinks Najanam Najanam Nasundariam Kavitam Vajabanishikamaye Mama Jamani Jamani Ishvari Bhavata Bhakti Hoitiki Twaye. Let me serve you. I don't want any money, I don't want any followers, I don't want any beautiful women. You know, that's usually, even though Prabhupada says this is the beginning of bhakti, you know, looking for some benefit, praying, coming to the temple, honouring God, but praying for some benefit for oneself, is the beginning of bhakti because of that appreciation of the higher authority of God. Still, they're not considered a devotee because of that personal motivation. And the mood of a devotee is, let me be your servant. What is it? Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace. Right? Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. This is the mood of... We see this mood characterized by Lord Chaitanya and evoked, if you like, or it's manifest in the prayers of the Sukshastakam. Jamani, Jamani, Ishvari, Bhavata, Bhakti, Hoitiki, Twai. Let me be your servant life after life. But I'm not interested. So this is quite a clear distinction. There are levels of bhakti. And it depends on the mood, on the motivation, on the desire of the devotee. Like Prabhupada explains that the activities don't need to be stopped. Our activities don't... What we do, we shouldn't stop. Each one of us has a... We will act. We will desire. But the purpose for which we act should be changed. So the action itself, the actions that we perform, we don't need to stop. You know, sometimes people think that to become liberated, one has to go to the forest and cease all action. Right. Just to sit in the forest, cease all action, just meditate on the Supreme, and one will be one can become liberated. But it's very interesting. In the first canon of the Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, I think it is. Sixth chapter. Yeah, fifth or sixth chapter. Is the story, you know what the fifth or sixth chapter of the first canon of the Bhagavatam is? What's the topic?
It's Narad Muni.
Yes, Narad Muni. And Prabhupada in the purports explains that going to the forest is in a mode of goodness. Right? And usually the notion of a yogi or a person seeking liberation is one who retreats to the Himalayas, right? Goes to the forest and just performs their meditation. But Prabhupada explains that going to the forest is like going into the, it's in the mode of goodness, because the lower modes of material nature are ignorance and passion, and then goodness. But Prabhupada says that even the mode of goodness needs to be transcended. Right? So he says, the forest is good, but better is a temple. Right? So we can go to the forest to seek out the personality of Godhead. We see that in Dhruva Maharaj, for example. Right? But Prabhupada says better than the forest is to live in a temple. And he mentions that devotional service begins with archana. Right? And one of the key features of archana, why living in a temple is so important, is because the activities of the temple are focused on rendering service to Krishna. Right? So one goes to the temple and one gives up one's own personal considerations and only does things for Krishna's benefit. Right? And of course, so many things go on. All of the nine processes of devotional service take place in the temple, right? And the purpose of all of those activities is basically to serve the Lord. And so that puts aside then the personal consideration. Then bhakti starts, right? You see why the temple is so important. Because all of the activities are focused on serving Krishna. Idam Krishnaya, idam namama. Right? It's a sacrifice. Idam. This is for Krishna, it's not for me. Right? So this is why the priests were, they understood the purpose of yajna is for the pleasure of the Lord. And so they're embarrassed by this mood of wanting something, worshipping the Lord, desiring something for themselves, which is what most people do. Most people do when they come to the temple. They come to the temple and they pray to Krishna, please, you know, fulfill my desires. Right? And Prabhupada says that's the beginning of bhakti. But they're not devotees. Right? Whereas when one comes to the temple and picks up on the mood of the devotee, of the true devotees, right? That going to the temple is for the pleasure of the Lord and that I should serve him, that's really when one becomes a devotee. And so that the level of bhakti where it is tinged with karma or jnana, right, with a desire for personal benefit, or the accumulation of knowledge, jnana,
right?
When devotional service is mixed with these personal considerations, then it becomes adulterated, if you like. It's not pure devotional service. And so the activities need not change, Prabhupada says. The activities need not change, but the purpose for which, the motivation for which the activities are performed should be, and can be, this is why temple is the better place, even though there's so much going on. And sometimes, you know, there appears to be a bit of a commotion, or there's some tension in a temple. Right? There may be disagreements even on how to do things. But because the ultimate purpose is to please Krishna, then and even though the action may appear to be just like the activities of the materialists, but because the purpose is for pleasing Krishna, this is the real beginning of bhakti, if you like. Although Prabhupada says bhakti means to acknowledge the presence of the Lord, which is true. Still, one is considered a devotee when the motivation is not to relieve one's distress, not to acquire money, not to satisfy one's inquisitiveness, but rather it is to please the Lord by one's activities. Then that's when one is considered a true devotee. So it is interesting. The beginning, the initiation is when one recognizes the supremacy of the Lord. Because Prabhupada also says initiation is when one commits to Lord Chaitanya's mission and becomes a preacher, which is elevated again. The mood of a pure devotee is to pray to the Lord for the benediction of being able to help others come to their senses and come to a realization of who they are. This is the motivation behind the Sankirtan movement. One renders service to the Lord, and Krishna mentions this at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. There's no one more dear to me than he who explains this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. So the elevated devotee, one who's most dear to Krishna, is one who brings others to Krishna. This is the mission. This is the mission of the Lord. Is to bring everyone to the point of surrender. And interesting here, the Lord is equal to all in this regard. And that's the priest, Maharaj Nabi's priest. Samyena Saravam Prati Vodhum Avidusham. All of us who are ignorant. The Lord's equal to everyone. But he says, Yeyata Mam Prapajante Tatam Stoiva Pajamiham. I reward them according to the degree of surrender. Right? So You know, those who approach the Lord are considered to be pious. And as Prabhupada says, this is the initiation into bhakti. But the highest devotee is one who understands the Lord's mission and then pursues those efforts, those endeavours, or performs those efforts and endeavours that are most pleasing to the Lord. And so the Lord sees service to others higher than service to himself. Right? We see that in Jagannath Puri. When Lord Chaitanya was performing his Sankirtan pastimes and his pastimes at the Rath Yatra, and the devotees from Bengal, from Navadvip, were coming every year to spend their time with Lord Chaitanya in their Chaturmasya season, right? And after a few years, Lord Chaitanya had an intimate conversation with Lord Nityananda. Right? And everybody was curious, what is Lord Chaitanya discussing with Lord Nityananda? And Lord Chaitanya had been very thoughtful and very meditative before his conversation with Lord Nityananda. And in that conversation he told Lord Nityananda, next year I don't want you to come to Jagannath Puri. Now how that must have broken the hearts of the devotees. Right? But he said, I want you to continue preaching. And this was more pleasing for Lord Chaitanya. And of course Lord Chaitanya is also teaching that by rendering service to the Lord, even if the Lord is not present, one is still with him. Right? Because this is our Vipralamba Seva, or this service in separation, which is the mood of the gopis also, because when Krishna had left Vrindavan, then the gopis were almost stricken with death, you know, due to separation from Krishna. But in that mood of separation, they felt Krishna's presence. So this is ultimately this notion that we're separate from the Lord. It accentuates our sense of longing, our sense of connection is enhanced. You know, what do they say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, this mood of rendering of service, even if there's no connection, physical connection, physical presence of the Lord, still we're connected because of that mood, the service mood, of wanting to serve Krishna, serve Krishna's desire. And of course, that greatest desire of Lord Chaitanya's was to see, the greatest desire of Krishna, is to see all of the conditioned souls reunited, reconnected with him. And of course, you know, the simplest way, not very difficult to do, the simplest way to do that is to go and chant Hare Krishna. Huh? Go and chant Hare Krishna. Immediately by chanting Hare Krishna, the pure devotee feels Krishna's presence. And this is why Narada Muni is such an important character, because wherever he goes, he's chanting. Right? And in that chanting, he feels great ecstasy. What is it? Narada Muni Jaivina Radhika Ramana Namine. That's something. And you know, in the early days in New York, the devotees wrote, was it Hayagriva or somebody wrote that song, you know, Narada Muni is a transcendental spaceman. And you know, I figure, I was just meditating on this point because I'm listening to these pastimes of in the Bhagavatam of Narada Muni, and the devotees, you know, the only books that they would have been reading at that point in time would have been Prabhupada's Bhagavatams, right? And so he features very strongly in those three or so chapters in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. And Satsarupa Maharaj tells the story how the devotees used to find various Gita Press versions of different literatures and so forth, and they would bring them to Prabhupada. And, you know, Prabhupada would tell them, you know, this is okay, or this is not okay, because, you know, not all Vedic literature, or shall we say, not all translations are from the Bhakti school. Very often, many of these translations were done by the people of the, by followers of the impersonalist philosophy. But anyway, the devotees had found a copy of the Narada Bhakti Sutra and showed it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, this is good. And then Satsarupa Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada if he would translate it, you know, if he would do his own commentary. It was 83 verses. And Prabhupada started to translate the Narada Bhakti Sutra. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was working on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Teaching there. Prabhupada ended up translating 13 verses and writing a purport for 13 verses. But his main focus was the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he mentioned in some of the latter purports of the Narada Bhakti Sutra that the Narada Bhakti Sutra is essentially a summary of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the essential same teachings, right? And so then Prabhupada said to Satsarupa Maharaj, we'll put this aside for now, we can come back to it, but keep working on it. Because he would receive the tapes from Srila Prabhupada and then would transcribe them and you know, prepare the text for editing and for publication, for printing. So we can see the context in which Narada Muni was prominent in the minds of those devotees. He was mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and the devotees had this copy of the Narada Bhakti Sutra that they were reading. And of course, Narada Muni is the epitome of bhakti. He's one of the greatest preachers, one of the greatest devotees, and he's always chanting Hare Krishna. Right? So, a great exemplar for us. Even though he doesn't have, and of course he can have, and does have, Narada Muni, as the song written by the devotees, he's a transcendental spaceman. He can go wherever he likes. So he can go to the spiritual world, he can go to the material world, he can go anywhere. But what does he do? He goes anywhere and everywhere to preach. And he does so by chanting on the Veena, which was given to him by Krishna. So this is the simplest way to preach. And it happens to also be the Yuga Dharma. It's the sacrifice for the age. Hare Nama Eva Kevalam Kalo Naskeva Katiya Anyata. So this is a symptom of pure devotional service in this day and age, is to understand the Lord's mission, and that the performance of bhakti, if you like, is predicated on this chanting, on chanting 16 rounds, but also chanting the Maha Mantra for the benefit of everybody, the Sankirtan Yajna. This is the real sacrifice. And the mood or the motivation is, of course, we get benefit. We get spiritual benefit from doing this, from doing the Sankirtan. But the motivation, and of course that's partly the motivation why we do it, but it's also selfish. The real benefit should be for others. There is no satisfaction greater than facilitating the happiness of others. In other words, the service is rendered not for one's own happiness, but for the happiness of others. And so the pure devotee prays, whatever difficulty, whatever problem, whatever trouble, I'll accept it happily if it makes you happy. And that's that mood of Srimati Radharani in this expressed by Lord Chaitanya. Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me, he's still my worshipful Lord. So that mood is encapsulated, if you like, in the efforts of the Sankirtan devotees. Book distribution is echoes that same mood. Prabhupada called the book distribution the Brihat Mridanga, right? The greater Mridanga, because the kirtan can be heard, a block or two away. But a book can keep on preaching wherever it goes. Very powerful. So Prabhupada encouraged book distribution and also prasadam distribution. Because chanting the holy name is powerful because for the chanter, for the devotee who's chanting Hare Krishna, he or she is being purified. But also those who hear the sound vibration, it's the beginning of their bhakti, because they're rendering service to the Lord by hearing. And this is the beginning of devotion. Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, right? So the ostensibly non-devotee becomes a devotee by rendering service through hearing. And even maybe disturbed by that, you Hare Krishna is this and Hare Krishna that and Hare Krishna the other thing. But then they're chanting. They've heard, now they're chanting. and gradually being purified. And then remembering as a consequence. And we know that, you know, when in the 80s and the 90s, people often ask us, why aren't you chanting? Why don't you come and chant? We miss you. So that, you know, this is such a simple process, such a consummate process of bhakti, the chanting of Hare Krishna. So simple, but yet so powerful. And so, you know, we're encouraged then to enhance our devotional service so that even the desire for liberation, which is somewhat selfish, can be purified by living in a temple. And so Prabhupada would like to see temples situated in the busiest places of the world, right? Why? So that the bhakti could flourish in the temple location, right? But then it was only a matter of, you know, it was only a step or two, and then one would be in a busy place where one could go and chant Hare Krishna and distribute that good fortune to everyone, right? And of course bring people back to the temple, right? For more purification. But what's the purpose of that purification? Not for our own liberation. Of course, that will happen anyway. But to become qualified to then go out and give the holy name, give the books, give the prasadam, because these things are purifying. And an individual is imperceptibly, unknowingly engaged in the process of bhakti. Right? It's just the multiplication of this performance of service to the Lord without material motivation. And what's most pleasing to the Lord is if one preaches. This is how we make advancement. You know, certainly we should study the Shastra, we should offer puja and so forth. But that's part of our sadhana, if you like. But the real purpose of performing the sadhana, performing the sacrifice, you know, here they're performing yajna, and we do that too. The real yajna is this sankirtan. The worship of the deity is actually for preaching. So that when people come to the temple, well, you know, it's very interesting. Srila Prabhupada's main focus on preaching was to publish books. Well, not only, well, it was certainly a major emphasis of his activities, but to support the performance of sankirtan. But then at the same time, Srila Prabhupada established temples all over the world. Prabhupada says book distribution is more important than temple worship, right? But Srila Prabhupada certainly put a lot of effort into making sure that there were temples all over the world. Because if you go out and do Harinam and you go out and do book distribution, you do prasadam distribution, what happens? You meet people who become inquisitive. And they want a place to associate. Right? And it's where the real, you know, the real rasa of bhakti is experienced. In the company of other devotees, in the presence of the Lord, in the form of his name, but also in the form of his achabigraha. So the basis, or the foundation is chanting Hare Krishna. And the books basically teach us how to successfully chant Hare Krishna, how to properly chant. But in spreading the holy name and distributing books, and why Prabhupada encouraged, well, right from the beginning, Prabhupada was encouraging prasadam distribution. And in Australia, Prabhupada said, You know, Australia will be conquered by prasadam distribution, right? People in Australia are pretty simple. And if you give them a good food, or if you feed others, good on you, mate. That's, you're doing good for others. Those activities will bring people back to the temple, because that's the place where we boil the milk. It's where we boil the milk and add sugar. That's where we make the sweet rice, more prasadam. But it's natural then that people, so therefore, even though, you know, book distribution, Harinam, these were key planks, you know, in Prabhupada's platform for preaching. The temples also, and temple worship or temples may be considered less important, right? But still, ultimately, that's the focal point of an ISKCON community, right? Because it's where then people can come for sangha, for sadhu sangha, and in that associate with one can fine-tune one's meditation. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo vachamsi vaikuntha guna anuvanane karo harir mandira, right? Karo harir mandira marjanadi shu. Come to the Lord, Amrish Maharaj went to the temple and then cleaned it, right? But vachamsi vaikuntha Gunano, so he would hear the talk, would engage in the descriptions of Vaikuntha, right? Always thinking of Krishna, always talking about Krishna, right? And so that's really what we're doing now. And at festivals, we have kirtan and we hear philosophy, we worship the Lord. You see, this is a feature of our festivals, right? We do an Abhishek, kirtan, shastra, archanam, right? Worship of the deity. And then what do? After we've done the puja, what do? We've had kirtan, we hear some philosophy, we worship the deity, then what do? Prasadam. And prasadam is actually part of deity worship, right? It's honouring the remnants of the archanam. Well, it's part of archanam, right? Honouring the remnants of the food that's been offered to Krishna. And then what do? After that? After we've had prasadam, what do? We associate. We're associated with the devotees. Huh?
Talk and mind about.
Yeah. Then we go and take rest. Then we get up and do it all over again. Right? And that makes a preaching community where we want to share that experience. We have the ecstasy, if you like, of we get the taste, the amrita, right? Purnamrita svajanam, the nectar of the sankirtan jagya, is to do all of these activities, and one feels the burden of material existence just dissipates like fog when the sun rises. You know, although the sun's probably, we're not going to see the sun today, probably by the look of it. So this is the actual jagya. Because, you know, we've got the pandemic and everything's upside down at the moment, but gradually it'll settle down. So, you know, doing Sankirtan is perhaps not the most practical at this point in time. Although there are those who would argue that, you know, we should be prepared to do Sankirtan until we die. You know, but there are others who say, no, just be sensible, wait. The performance of Sankirtan now is more than likely going to upset people. It's good, there's obviously no loss in doing Sankirtan, but you know, I got a letter on Wednesday, or Tuesday or Wednesday, from one of our neighbours complaining about the devotees who are doing Sankirtan. And they're not wearing their masks, right? And so people, when they see others not wearing their masks properly, you know, they just think, what's wrong with, you know, this is just selfish behaviour, you know. The risk of getting infected oneself or affecting others, it's not worth it. Let's just wait until we've mitigated that risk. So that's the general mood of the ISKCON community, is sure, Harinam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma and everybody gets benefit. But, you know, why, you know, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, why disturb the minds of the ignorant, right? With your preaching, right? We don't want to disturb the minds of the ignorant. We want to encourage them. And so we don't have to be in their face. We already know that in-your-face preaching generally makes you unpopular. Right? Ma suchaha, do not fear to surrender to me. Sure, you know, chanting Hare Krishna is bliss. We know that. But it requires a little bit of intelligence to preach Kala Desha Patra. And the devotees in the 70s soon found out that in-your-face preaching makes enemies. Doesn't make friends. Makes enemies. Right? More constructive and more potent, actually, is that which doesn't look like preaching. You know, I was asked the other day, on Saturdays, I've been doing an Isopanishad class online. And the devotees were asking me, younger devotees were asking me, how do we deal with parents? How do you deal with parents? You know, how do you preach to your parents? And I told, and I said, well, from my experience is you don't. See, the mood of a parent is to tell the son or the daughter what to do. That's their tattva, right? That's the tattva of parents. Children don't tell parents what to do. If you want to get in a fight with your mum and dad, especially your dad, but also your mum, then go and tell them to chant Hare Krishna. But what's more potent is just by them, anybody really, seeing the effects of what chanting Hare Krishna does to you. Right. That's more powerful. Isn't it? That's much more powerful. When the parents see what their... Because, you know, parents always want the best for their children. Right? They always want that. And they want to see their children manifesting good qualities and being happy. Right? And so when they see... This happened to my... You know, my mum said to me, 10 years. When I first rang up my mother, I told her, when I Chintaroopa and I moved to Melbourne and we were living in the temple, and it was 2 weeks later, and I rang my mum and I said, oh, living in the Hare Krishna temple now. hadn't discussed it with her at all, just left. A few weeks before we left, I introduced my girlfriend of 4 years to my parents. It was the first time I'd taken a ginger ever to met my mum and dad. And then 2 weeks later, poof, gone. So I rang up. Mum and dad knew what I was doing, and they also knew a ginger ever because, my mum taught in the high school that we went to, and she Ajinja Rupa was one of the school prefects in Portugal. So my parents knew my wife and family. So anyway, I ring up my mum and I say, "Mum, I'm living in the Hare Krishna." And she goes, "Oh no, you sound like a parrot already." And I said, "Well, I haven't said anything yet. What are you talking about?" But then 10 years later, my mother said to me, she said, "I was embarrassed that my son became a Hare Krishna. But then I was embarrassed because I didn't know why I was embarrassed." My parents saw that I was doing, if I'd become an Anglican priest, they would have been very happy. But they saw that I was doing exactly the same things as a devotee. And they saw the change in my character. And I learned it very early on in the piece, don't preach to your family, they'll dislike you. So anyway, chant Hare Krishna, distribute books, give people prasadam, and just be normal. Be friendly. They'll get it. They'll work it out. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.